So Phoenix will not get either the Republican or the Democratic convention, but, and this is a big but, they have landed the 2016 Furry People Convention. The Furry People! This is a big one. This is so much better. It goes the most viral of any of the major conventions, the Furry People. So you'll be seeing yourself everywhere with furry people. Well, what do you know?
Live from the Chandler Center for the Arts in Chandler, Arizona, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, Harry Sen on drums. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, it's all the Phoenix Valley news that isn't, cosmologist Lawrence Krauss, and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by Santan Ford. Find out how it's all about you by visiting santanford.com and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who says he's going to Sun City because it's two for one now, it's Michael Feldman.
Wait, he's a cosmologist? He's a cosmologist? I thought he was a cosmetologist. I prepared entirely for the wrong interview. Oh, boy. Oh, well, fake it. I always do. Oh, and this just in, this whole convention thing here, an inside source told me that Phoenix is attempting to lure the UFO Congress from Fountain Hills, so there's going to be a lot of conventions and congresses here, is what I'm saying, so don't feel bad. Hello, Chandler, Gilbert, Mesa, Tempe, Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, Glendale, Peoria, Avondale, El Mirage, Surprise, All Points, East and West, and Sun City West, and everywhere mistakenly lumped to, and welcome also, Phoenix. Phoenix is more of a generalization than it is an actual city, you know, when you think about it. So what it's called, Phoenix, is actually like calling the warring city-states of the old boot Italy. That was not Italy. Those were warring city-states. Of course, Phoenix is the home of the Waste Management Open. The best name of any open anywhere, I think. Like, you want open waste management, I think it's a wonderful thing. On the other hand, somehow fitting that Tiger Woods sort of ends his career at the Waste Management Open. I love Tiger. After all, this is a place where the University of Phoenix Online owns its own Super Bowl stadium. It's an online university, come on. They don't field a team unless it's a fantasy league. University of Phoenix. And besides, it's in Glendale. What the heck? Who's mayor cannot even get a ticket to the Super Bowl? I mean, this is, you know, geez. It was a great Super Bowl, though, especially for those of us who hope both teams would lose. Yeah. And that's just about all of us, I think. I don't know. It's about as close as you can get without an act of God, actually. Just, you know, lightning striking everybody. All that and Katy Perry riding in on a giant mechanical Russell Brand. I thought that was just a, that was amazing. Yeah, hey. Problem, of course, was getting the Patriots out of town afterwards, you know, what with nature wreaking vengeance on Boston there. So, you know, or New England, as they like to call it. I mean, the last thing you want is the Belichick crowd, you know, settling here. Deflating everybody's balls. I don't mean that metaphorically. I mean that literally. You know, that's what they do. It wasn't being metaphorical. Now, the Seahawks actually left behind their 12th man. You know, apparently, he called that goal line pick. Shouldn't field 12 men. You know, that's a penalty anyhow. That's a ridiculous thing for them. Stupid. So the 12th man is still here. Would somebody please come and collect Paul Allen? Because he's just wandering around town. It's kind of sad at this point. We're really looking forward to staying in Chandler. Yeah, Chandler. This time. Because Elevation Chandler was on my bucket list. So what a surprise it was. I'm in young, professional, luxury residential community and all. now a luxury rubble community. It was a bit of a shock to me because I was looking forward to being there because I had 2 months free rent coming. Oh, you're not so laughing about this one here. Okay. Do not mention, let me make a note of this, do not mention Elevation Chandler again. Makes crowd uneasy. Did you invest in it or what? I mean, did you have a place? Okay, never mind. Forget it. Never said it. Well, plan B anyhow for me is Sun City West at this point. You don't have to stay locked in your condo there hoping they won't discover you are not a young professional. Sun City, where everyone's packing despite firing blanks. Anyone here from Sun City? Huh? What, they don't let them out? I don't understand. One? Who? What? What? It's bingo night? What is it? Private night? Driving night? Oh, they can't drive at night. Couldn't they come during the day and just stay a long time? God, this out here, it's different out here, I'll tell you that. Old people can't drive at night. Where I come from, that's when they do their best driving. And all over the place, too. Okay, firing blanks, anyhow. You know, between guns and medical marijuana, sun never sets on Sun City. The only thing that stops me defecting right now is that everybody from Sun City is from Milwaukee. So I was hoping not to see them again in this lifetime. You know, next lifetime, no problem. Okay, and all the news that isn't from Chandler, Gilbert, Mesa, Tempe, Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, Glendale, Peoria, Avondale, all the rest, Surprise. The new Arizona law allows you to pick your teeth and stir your coffee with your gun. The last two things you couldn't do with your gun. I think that covers everything right now. There's also a little-known provision that allows you to put a few shells in the collection plate at church. Much appreciated. Then, of course, you know the Arizona shotgun wedding. That's where you actually marry the shotgun. They love their guns. What can I say? But with the new relaxed gun laws, the only thing still regulated is in Arizona is using cash assistance at liquor stores, the track, casinos, or public radio fund drives. Okay, never mind. I didn't say that. Under the new marriage laws in Arizona, people of the same caliber can marry. So I think that's a wonderful, that's a wonderful advance. Chandler, meanwhile, has banned vaporizers, or vapes, as they call them, unless they discharge a projectile with the vapor. That's okay. In other news, Phoenix monitored 1,000 people for measles, during which time many broke out in hives, and it was hard to diagnose what was going on there. Gilbert's having a little trouble agreeing on sex ed for 10th graders. Of course, by 10th grade, they should be able to teach it. Anyway, they decided to go back to what we had in the day called a hygiene class. That's pretty safe. Taught by a retired girls' phy-ed teacher. You don't really discuss sex, just washcloth and soap after. Hygiene. Universities in Arizona are pretty excited about the yes, 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 yes means yes, 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 yes policy. So anyway, we didn't get into Elevation Chandler, and since they removed the elevation, but we're at the San Marcos Golf Resort, you know, which is actually very nice. It's very lovely. It's been lovely since 1913. We've been there since 1913, actually, off and on. We always come there. It's really more than I deserve, actually. They must have thought I was Peter Seagal or Steven Seagal, one of them. You know, they really started the whole green golf course thing in Arizona where they're not naturally occurring. I was surprised to hear that you didn't actually hit. Although the ball really flies on a gravel fairway, I'll tell you that. Back in the days, you know, you get a mile-long drive back in the old days there on a gravel fairway with the bounces. Bounces can add several hundred feet to your drives on gravel. Okay, never mind. I was in the presidential suite there at the San Marcos. I couldn't get an answer on which presidents actually stayed there. I don't think Obama did, because he kind of, he came through like kind of as a whirling dervish. He whirling dervished through town pretty quickly there, although he did stay to play golf, several rounds of golf. Which, by the way, reminds me, you know, when Eisenhower did it, they thought it was great. Obama plays a few rounds of golf, big deal. You know, he could do worse than be the black Eisenhower. Just thinking, I'm thinking out loud here, always a mistake. We did have a little incident at San Marcos, so what with Adam, our producer, confusing the fountain with the hot tub. May have been alcohol involved. We're looking into it. We're looking into it again tonight, actually, I think. Anyway, back to all the news that isn't. Still no Google Fiber in the Valley. I have to settle for unknown fiber. Jury's still out on KPOC as a signal transmitter. Joe Arpaio's criminal employment unit found to be a unit that employs criminals. I just read these. I don't make them up. The Chandler woman who injected fecal matter into her husband's IV illustrates the dangers of marrying an RN. Arizona will stop citing but continue to Sieg Heil Uber drivers. The first driverless car seen going the wrong way on 101. With Phoenix going to demand-based parking meters up to $4 an hour, you'll have to plan your evening around your meter from now on. So keep that in mind. This is an editorial, I guess. You know, they can take away the right to refuse service, but they'll have to wrench the right to give lousy service from my cold, dead hands. Editorial reflects no one's thinking, including my own. Still no sales at Alice's Attic. Alice Cooper's attempt to sell clothes actually worn by him. He didn't really figure on the yuck factor. And finally, and I mean that, Governor, he's a doozy. It's early, but he's still given no indication of any policy whatsoever, although he does seem to be leaning toward getting rid of speed cameras. More on this later. That's all the news that isn't for the Valley. Thank you all for having us here. It's great to be back. I will defect sooner or later. By the next time you see me, I will have defected. I will be defective by the next time you see me. The physics of Star Trek. You know it's got to be associated with ASU. You know, I mean, there's no way that's not coming out of ASU, the physics of Star Trek. Lawrence Krauss is the man who wrote it, and it really turned physics on its head. And its ear, on its cosmic head and ear. He's with us right now, Lawrence Krauss, ladies and gentlemen, joining us here to explain the Big Band theory. What happened to the Big Band? We don't know. Where Lawrence is, we don't know either. Oh, yeah. All right. The Big Band theory. Now, what happened to the Big Bands?
The Big Band theory?
Yes.
You say?
The Darcy's and stuff.
Yeah.
That's,
I think, that's a different field completely.
Okay, so it's not what you're prepared to talk about.
Now, I'm not prepared, actually, the good news is I'm not prepared to talk about anything. So.
Really? You're always prepared to talk about it.
We'll just wing it.
Okay, all right. My basic, they say that the universe, the Big Bang started, and all the mass in the universe was in something the size of a grapefruit.
Smaller.
But how could that be before there were grapefruits?
They came from nothing. I wrote a whole book about it.
Yes, I know, and I have the book right here. It's a book about nothing, ladies and gentlemen. I tried to read it many times.
You clearly learned a lot, I can see.
a universe from nothing. And this is a big seller for you, too, this book.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, and it's mostly double talk, I've noticed.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
you've got arrows
you're an expert,
diagrams so and vectors.
You know, it's smoke and mirrors, but again.
The average person can never understand any of this, really.
Sure,
so
sure they can. That's the whole point. That's amazing.
This
stuff
this
is amazing.
Yes, it is. How does it play here in Arizona, though? I mean, do you have a little reaction to saying that?
We have a great, I think a lot of the stereotypes about Arizona are wrong. We regularly fill up an auditorium with this many people talking about science three or four times a year.
Yes,
the people here
but you know how many people there are in Arizona. This is not nearly all of them, you understand.
No, no, but I think it's amazing that we can do that. How many places could you fill up an auditorium with 3,000
people? But you know what? It's funny about that, because when you talk about the Big Bang Theory,
you got it
started
right.
With a priest, as your book points out.
In fact, it did.
Yes.
It did, which shows that some priests are useful.
See, now you went and blew the advantage we had going there. I mean, now we got to play makeup here at this point. But that's true, isn't it? Pope Pius cited
yeah, Lemaitre, Georges Lemaitre, was a priest and a physicist. He got his PhD from MIT.
Yeah.
And in fact, the interesting thing was, after he proposed the Big Bang, and in fact it was shown, the Pope argued that, of course, it validated Genesis. And he wrote a letter to the Pope and said, don't say that. He was a smart man. He basically said, don't say that because, you know, it depends what you think. If you want it to validate Genesis, you can. Mm-hmm. Or if you wanted to say that the whole universe could have been created without God, you can. The fact is, whether you believe in God or not, the Big Bang really happened, and that's the point.
Yeah. So you can have a belief.
Let's
in God.
Let's have a round of applause for that one. Yeah.
Yes. There we go. You have belief in God, or the Creator, and also belief in this. That's the way he started.
Yeah. He was. Yeah. Exactly. And I think it's important that to realize that as long as you're willing to accept the evidence of reality, then the rest of the stuff doesn't get in the way.
Yeah. Is it true that you carry in your back pocket a card explaining the Big Bang Theory for doubters?
Well, I normally have a little diagram, which is in the book. No, I don't. My wife took my wallet, so I
Have you got a theory about that?
Yeah, it's much more complicated.
Speaking of uncomplicated, then, you know, all this stuff is about trying to find some beautiful, simple theory, like a unified theory. Why does it have to be beautiful? Why does it have to be, like, just one beautiful piece of mathematics?
You know, we use that word, but in fact, it doesn't. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. In fact, what's often happens is it looks pretty ugly when you're developing. It's only after the fact that it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
And from a physics perspective, it doesn't have to be elegant or gorgeous. None of those things matter. What matters is, does it describe reality? Does it predict things that you can then test? And the rest doesn't matter. That's what's the great thing. It's nature that decides what's beautiful, not people.
Yeah, but you know that's not true. I mean, all these guys, for some reason, the assumption, like they make assumptions, like everyone else does, that there's going to be one beautiful, simple, unifying theory, and it'll be a beautiful piece of math.
Well, you know, scientists...
A lovely piece of math.
Yeah, well, a lovely
not
piece
grammar,
of math.
Not grammar, not anything else.
It's math. Math is the language of the universe, it appears to be. Yeah. But the point is that, you know, while it's not well known, scientists are people. And...
all of them or just some of them?
Well, most of the ones I know, actually. Not all of them, but most of them. And the point is that
good people.
And we're driven by senses of aesthetics and we push ourselves things forward. But what's really great is we can think something's beautiful and we can work on it for 20 years. But the minute we find out it's wrong, we throw it out like yesterday's radio program or something like that.
I beg your pardon. But you came to this through, you're a particle guy, right?
Yeah, I'm a particle physicist originally, yeah.
And you became a cosmetologist after that?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, you look like you could use some work here, actually.
That was a cheap shot.
Yeah, I know, but so was yours. It's okay.
I know. Sorry, even maybe. You're a little behind. I don't care. All right. I do. Actually, it's a very good book, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
Thank you.
It's very hallucinating. And like the thing about the supernovas or something, how important they are to understanding anything.
Yeah, the fact that stars explode is a really something I've talked about a lot, that every atom in every one of your bodies, including yours, comes from a star, including yours. Comes from stars that exploded. Every atom in your body has experienced the most violent fireworks in the history of the universe, and atoms in your left hand would probably came from different stars than your right hand. We wouldn't be here if stars didn't explode. And as I said somewhere, so forget Jesus, stars died so you'd be born.
You know, if you would just try to avoid those statements.
I thought I had to say it just to see if I got groans or applause.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I think you got both, actually. People were groaning while they were applauding.
No, but it is amazing that we are... When people ask, why do you do this stuff? What does it matter?
Why do you do this stuff?
Yeah, see, there you go. I get asked that all the time.
Yeah.
And the point is, we are all interested in our origins. We're all interested in where we come from.
Yeah.
You know, Don Johansson's going to be here later, a different kind of origin.
Yeah.
And so these are questions that are important to everyone, and understanding that we are not... That the cosmos is not just out here. There, it's in this room. And every one of us have experienced it, and that's amazing to think that, in fact, that the atoms in my body have been through many stars that exploded. Some of them may have had planets around them that may have even had civilizations around them that were destroyed in those stars, and so there's a continuum that I think.
You know what I was thinking though one time?
What were you thinking?
And I was a little high. I'll be honest.
You were
with you.
Okay. Is Wisconsin one of those states or no?
What?
Legal.
Well, we have Governor Walker, so we have to be high.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right.
So anyhow.
I understand that absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
No, the light that you see from all these planets and stars and everything and all the galaxies and stuff, like 50 million years getting here, right?
More.
Couldn't they all be gone right now? We actually are all alone in the universe?
Well, it could be.
50 million years for it to get
more,
here.
More than that. When we look at the Hubble Space Telescope pictures, we see stars that are galaxies that are 8 or 9 billion light years away.
That's a long time.
That means that light was emitted before the sun even formed.
Yeah,
and the neat thing is...
Think about that.
When they hear this radio program,
yeah,
which after all, we're emitting electromagnetic waves, 9 billion years from now, they'll hear it, and you'll be long gone, we'll be long gone, and any evidence of our existence will be gone except for this radio program, which they'll hear.
Well, and they'll hear you, Lawrence Krauss, saying those things again. I Love Lucy right now is in the Andromeda Galaxy. I figured I worked it out one time.
Really?
A lot of explaining to do, Lucy. Okay. Right now in the Andromeda Galaxy, they don't know what to make of it. Maybe it's the accent.
They're still looking for intelligent life there, actually.
Yeah. Good luck. We're looking for it here, I understand. Kepler defended his mother in a witchcraft trial. That's cool.
Yeah, Kepler, there's a lot of it in the book, and I often try when I'm talking to...
Would you defend your mother in a witchcraft trial? That was Kepler,
though.
She may
be listening, but
Kepler was a good guy.
She's a good witch.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, that's what I was saying.
Mine too.
But, there's a lot of interesting personalities in history of science, which are neat. And Kepler was amazing because he also wrote the first science fiction story about actually going to the moon. And he was he had a really difficult life, unlike his mentor, Tycho Brahe, was a nobleman.
Tycho Brahe, was he the guy with the fake nose?
The fake nose, he had a few of them, depending upon the...
He had three noses?
He also had a pet reindeer, and he had a pet dwarf. I'm sorry, I know it's not politically correct, but that's what they called back then. And he used to train them both to do tricks.
You got to learn to self-edit. You know that. Then you'd be much further along in this whole business. What was Kepler's contribution?
Kepler?
Yeah.
Basically...
Weren't we talking about Kepler?
I thought we were. I didn't know what we were talking about. But yeah, Kepler.
Kepler.
He actually discovered really the laws, the empirical laws that tell us the planets go around the sun, and told us how they go around the sun.
Elliptical
and it was his data that led Isaac Newton to develop the universal law of gravity. If Kepler hadn't been there, Newton would be an afterthought. It was really his data that Newton used, and then the rest is history.
Ah.
So Kepler.
And what did Tycho Brahe do besides?
Well, Tycho Brahe actually did. He had a noble career, been around for a long time. He spent 20 years on his back, and it's a long history, a tradition of that. And he basically
50 Shades of Tycho Brahe.
Yeah, exactly. He looked at the position of planets on the sky before the telescope was built. He had an observatory. I've been there in the Isle of Man. His observatory was underground. Now, I could ask you a question. Why was his observatory underground? Say, I don't know.
No, I will not.
Can you think about it?
I don't know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, because in fact, he didn't have a telescope, so his instruments were underground, so the wind wouldn't blow them around. So they were in a crater, so he could look up and measure the positions of planets in the sky. And all he did for about 30 years
was
measure...
What did he use
He used very careful calibration instruments.
He did look through his little fingers?
Like that. You can't see this on radio.
Did he use dwarf or something?
In case you're a vampire.
Did he look through the dwarf?
But he used very carefully calibrated instruments to just measure the position of planets on the sky.
And that's
all
important.
He did for 30 years.
Yeah.
Then he did what most of us do,
because
Kepler was his assistant. He gave it to Kepler and said, figure it out. Kepler spent about 20 years without a Mac or anything trying to figure it out and discovered that those positions of the planets in the sky meant that planets went in ellipses around the sun.
Yeah.
And that was an amazing fact. And it was amazing because the ellipses are almost circles. The Earth goes around the sun. It's almost a circle.
Yeah.
It's just about 1% away from a circle.
Yeah.
And if he hadn't trusted Tycho Brahe so much to get things accurate to 1%, he would have gotten the wrong answer. And as I say, Newton once again would have been wrong. So it's an amazing combination of observation, which is what science is all about, and theory. And you got to know when to trust the observations, when not to.
Mm-hmm. Are you good at math? I mean, do you have to know math to be a scientist? That's the only thing that's keeping me out of it. I would have been a
You have to.
That and the scientific method. I'd rather jump to a conclusion than go through all of it.
Well, I'm a theoretical physicist, and so what I do is math. So, yeah, I'm pretty good at math. But the point is that it takes all types. I get, again, when I see kids and they think, well, I'm not the best math student in my class. Or it takes all types. I have many colleagues of mine who've won the Nobel Prize. Some of them are math whizzes, some aren't. It really, science, when it's being done well, takes all types. But, of course, you have to have some fluency in mathematics because it is the way to describe the universe. And most people have that kind of fluency. We convince kids that they don't. But really, it's because we have teachers who convince them that they don't understand the math.
Anyway. What if it's not all mathematical? What if it is all grammatical?
It's not.
What if it's a grammar problem? The universe is. Aren't we making an assumption? We should start with no assumption.
No, let me give you an example from Richard Feynman. So if I say, as Kepler might have said, that the planets, when they sweep out around the sun, they sweep out equal areas in equal times. One statement.
Right.
Then Newton would say there's a force pointing radially towards the sun. That's another statement. Now, linguistically, you could never connect them. But in fact, mathematically,
but you just show them.
If I gave you one, if I told you one statement, you could, till the end of time, I'm sure you wouldn't get the other statement by looking at English. But if you use math, you'd be able to derive it.
By reading one of your books, you would have it.
There
and
you
that's,
go.
That's,
and that's why, and
it's
that's
linguistics
why, you know, but you can get a
grammar.
Long way without the math. And that's why I write popular books, because you don't have to understand everything. You don't have to understand all the details to appreciate it. That's another thing that kind of bothers me about science, besides people saying, you know, what's it good for, the kind of science I do.
Yeah.
The other thing is that we enjoy music without being musicians. We enjoy plays without being playwrights, art without being artists. Mm-hmm. But somehow, we convince people they can't enjoy science without being scientists. Yeah. And that's garbage.
Yeah. Is this the intro lecture or what? Yeah. This lecture.
All right. Friendly crowd.
That's first day of class. That's what you hear that one. Come on. You know how many times he said that? Come on. Okay, so illustrate curved three-dimensional space without using any observers.
A curved three-dimensional space?
Yeah, without using an observer of any sort.
How could I describe it?
No, I want this it's on the final. I want you to illustrate curved three-dimensional space without using an observer.
If I threw a ball, if a non-observer threw a ball, if a machine threw a ball really hard in a curved three-dimensional universe in that direction, and for the radio audience, that means that direction, then if it waited long enough, it would come and hit the machine in the back of the, whatever the back of the machine is called. So if you, in a curved three-dimensional universe, a closed three-dimensional universe, if you threw a ball in that direction, it would eventually come back and hit you in the back of the head.
And why?
Because the universe is closed. Now, we can't picture it because we're three-dimensional beings, but we could picture a curved two-dimensional universe, like the surface of a balloon. An ant who lived on that balloon might not be able to picture that balloon was curved, but we live in three dimensions, so we can look down and see that curved two-dimensional surface. But we're three-dimensional beings. In order to sort of see the curvature, if you wish, of a three-dimensional universe, you'd have to be a four-dimensional being. And there aren't any, as far as we know.
Double talk. Double talk.
No, I mean, there's some things you just have to describe with mathematics, and you build up an intuition. And what don't you think it's amazing that even though we can't picture it, actually, here's a way to picture it.
What?
You draw a triangle.
Okay.
Draw a triangle. Now, did you grow up in Wisconsin?
Yes.
So you know what the sum of the angles of a triangle are, right?
Yes.
Yeah?
It's the sum of the angles of a triangle.
Okay. You may have remembered.
Whatever the angles are, you add them up.
It's 180 degrees. Do you remember
that? That's what I meant to say.
From that wonderful math class. Okay. There you go, right there. It's right.
180
now,
degrees, says right here.
The amazing thing is, in our universe, if it was curved and you do a triangle that was big enough, the sum of the angles wouldn't be 180 degrees, and that's how we'd know.
Why wouldn't they be?
Because parallel lines eventually move apart. And it turns out you can. Here's a.
So it wouldn't be a triangle.
Hold on. Here you can. Here, let's do a thought experiment that
you're changing the whole paradigm.
No. Let's do a thought experiment that you could do on the radio. So think of the surface of the Earth.
Oh, a thought experiment you do on the radio. That's a good one.
Don't you think that's a good thing to do on the radio?
No.
Okay.
Never been done.
You should try it. But anyway, so let's say you go around the equator and you make a right angle and go up to the
Wait
north
a minute,
pole.
Okay. You go around the equator.
Well, you just go like, you know, a little bit, not all the way around the equator, just say a quarter of the way around the equator.
Okay.
Then you make a right angle and you go up to the North Pole.
Yeah.
And then you make another right angle and you come back down to the equator.
Around the other side?
No, you just hit the equator and somewhere else, you know, and you've got a triangle that has three right angles. What's 3 times 90? These are hard questions.
270.
270. Yeah. Is 270 180?
No.
Then you know the Earth is curved. Wow.
I got to give you that one. But is it not true, or is it true, or either one, I guess, would be answered to the same question. Is it true or is it not true that there, some believe that the cosmos is flat, a flat cosmos?
Well, in fact, let me first say we never use the word believe in science. Believe is not a word that matters, okay? But the evidence suggests, in fact, that the universe appears to be flat. Now, flat, what does a flat universe mean? It doesn't mean flat
what
like
does
the
it
surface
mean?
Table. It means it's the universe you always thought you lived in, where the X, Y, and Z axes, you remember those from school, point in the one direction here, and over in the other end of the physical universe, they point in exactly the same directions.
Yeah.
Whereas if the universe were curved, over there, they point in different directions than over here. So it's just a good old-fashioned boring universe.
But don't we now believe it is curved? That is no.
No, we it's actually...
What are we believing? We don't know what to believe.
The evidence, you can believe what you want, but whether you believe it or not...
I want to believe what's right.
Whatever you believe, the universe is flat, as far as we can tell. We can measure those triangles. We've actually measured
triangles...
It's
more convenient for you to believe that it's flat.
No,
that
it's not convenient.
It is flat.
It isn't convenience. That's what's great. In fact, science is more fun when it isn't convenient. Because it means we can learn something. Okay, when it means your prejudices
fun for
are
you
wrong,
and fun are two
then
things.
It's exciting. In fact, one of the, as I often say, if you're a theoretical physicist, the two most exciting states to be in are wrong or confused, and I'm usually both.
Yeah.
But we've measured triangles that are the size of the universe, and it adds up to 180 degrees, and that's how we know the universe is flat.
Oh, you've measured triangles that are the size of the universe?
Yeah,
we have.
We have.
In your dreams, you have. When did we do that? Then?
We've done that with telescopes about 10 years ago. It's only been about in the last 10 years. We can look out at the farthest distances and look at objects whose size we basically understand and know. And that's a little too long to explain here. But we can know their size, and then we see how big they look. You know, for example, this bottle that I'm holding up here, if it was on the other end of the auditorium, would look very small to you.
Yes.
Right? And if it's a known distance away... And if it's a known distance away and you were a surveyor, you could look where the bottom of the bottle was and where the top was and figure out how far away it was by using straight lines and all that. Mm-hmm. Well, we can look essentially at this equivalent on the other end of the visible universe, and we know how big it is. We see how big it looks, and it turns out those two agree if light travels in straight lines. Mm-hmm. And light travels only in straight lines in a flat universe. So we've been able to measure to an accuracy of 1%. That the universe is flat.
But didn't Einstein posit?
Oh, this sounds good.
Didn't he posit that space is curved?
Einstein posited that, I use the word posited because it makes us both sound scholarly.
I like
too.
Yeah, I never get to use it in my everyday conversation.
But what he did say is that matter curves space. So around you, space is curved. And around me, space is curved. So there are little dimples in space around you and dimples around me and everyone else
your
around here.
Your dimples are curved?
Yeah, your dimple is very cute.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
And so that's the case, but there are little dimples on a background that's otherwise flat. It sounds like...
Do you understand?
They're little bumps.
I mean, is space curved or isn't it?
It's curved if you put matter there. Okay, but if you add up, and this is the amazing thing. This is the reason I wrote that book. So how can you get a flat universe?
Yeah.
The way you can do it is if you add up all the energy of the universe, and it adds up to zero.
Divide by two.
No, it adds up to zero. Dividing by two, it's still zero. but isn't that amazing that you add up the energy of everything in the universe,
again.
And it's zero?
How can you do that, though? You can't do that.
Well, we take a big calculator.
have you personally added up all the energy in the universe?
And it's zero. Because the only way you can get a flat universe, in some sense, is if the total... If it turns out that gravity has two kinds of energy, positive energy and negative energy. And the positive energy of mass in the universe gets cancelled out by the gravitational attraction of that mass, and they cancel each other exactly, as far as we can tell, which means the total energy of the universe is nothing.
Yeah.
And, therefore, if you were going to create a universe from nothing, what would you make the total energy of the universe?
Nothing.
You got it.
So your job is over, really. What are you going to do next for a living? Do you have any other skills that would be employable?
That would be sad, but the good news is every time we discover something, there are more mysteries. For example, we don't understand what makes it nothing. For example, it turns out most of the energy of the universe resides in nothing. Uh-huh. Namely, if you take empty space You get rid of all the matter and all the radiation and everything.
Yeah.
It still weighs something, and we don't understand why. Uh-huh. The biggest mystery in science. Maybe some young person
and
here will
solve
that problem.
It sort of rules out everything you just said, too, doesn't it?
No. You have to have enough of that to cancel the negative gravitational...
How can there's nothing there that weighs something?
You know what? It seems crazy, doesn't it?
Do I look stupid to you?
Do you want me to answer that question?
If the answer is like the other one, it's not going to make any difference. Whether you answer or not.
No, so it seems crazy. But the amazing thing we've learned is that the universe doesn't decide... You know, we don't get to decide what's sensible. The universe does. And what we have to do is force our beliefs to conform to the evidence of reality rather than the other way around. And when the universe tells us, you know, this is the way it acts, we have to realize that's the way it acts, and we have to come up with an explanation. Quantum mechanics is crazy. Relativity is crazy. But they both describe the universe, whether or not you like it.
It's not that I don't like it. It's I'm trying to... And then the other thing is, what? We gotta go. This is the end of the universe now.
Is that? Did you do that? Did he tell you that when we got a bad question? Was this?
No.
Okay.
He does that. He tries to produce the show sometimes.
Yeah.
Just ignore him.
Okay.
Okay. I know this black dark matter that has no mass, right?
No, dark matter does have mass. It's dark energy that has that's empty
okay.
space.
Which
dark
one? Matter, which one can't we find?
Neither.
Okay.
Dark matter is
got
stuff.
A big job ahead of you.
It turns out 97% of the universe is made of stuff that we don't yet understand. In fact, if you looked at the entire universe and you got rid of all the stars and galaxies that you can see in the night sky when you're not in Phoenix outside, you got rid of all of that, the universe would be essentially exactly the same. We are less than a 1% bit of pollution in a universe of dark matter and dark energy. Mm-hmm. And you get rid of us and everything we love and... It wouldn't make any difference.
Wow. On that note, I think we should close, Lawrence Krauss. Yeah. It's a beautiful moment for all of us here to know that we are nothing in the middle of nothing. Well, it's fascinating. It's a great book, by the way. You should read the Star Trek one, too, if you really want to do the whole body of his work. A Universe from Nothing, Lawrence M. Krauss. Thank you so much.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Read it. ASU, the origins guy, right? That origin thing going on with ASU. Yeah, thank you. Very nice to meet you. And he's not a cosmetologist. So I got that all wrong. ASU is very cool, by the way. Because they got this origins thing. And it's all cross-departmental and cross-thought, and it's really kind of cool. They got flying saucer guys in there. It's really very cool. Anything goes at ASU. I love it. All right. Well, a little band number here.
Yeah.
Speaking of the big band theory.
This is a little tune I wrote. It's called Star Buster.
Sounds good. Apropos.
Once again, it's Michael Feldman.
What? What?
It's up to you.
Me again?
You're back.
Whoa. Asked and answered. A mountain. No, I don't know.
And don't ever do that again. Are we back on the air now, or did it take us off after that entirely? Okay. Well, I'm going to go out here then. Can I do that?
Yeah, you got a minute or so.
Because they've been so nice. And they can't all come up here, so I'm going to just go down there and say hello. Okay? Who has always wanted to say something on the radio? Really? And you have? And you never had the opportunity until now? Have you been saving something up? Come on down over here. Come on over here. What is your message to the world at large?
I don't really have one, but I didn't think you were going to call me.
Can you think of one real quick? Because otherwise it's kind of a... Lost moment.
I can't.
Well, no, wait a minute now. Okay, come here. What's your name?
Laura.
Laura, and what are you doing these days?
I go to school.
Which school do you go to?
Scottsdale Prep.
Scottsdale Prep. What does Scottsdale Prep prep you for?
I'm not really sure.
And among your course of studies at Scottsdale Prep, what do you find the most interesting?
Spanish, probably, because it's fun.
Yeah. You like Spanish a lot?
Yeah.
My daughter got into Spanish, and now she is a Latina. Honest to God. She was in Peru, then she was in Nicaragua, and now she's in Madrid, you know. So she's, a, you know.
Yeah.
So you have that to look at. Okay, well, I'm glad we had the chance to get together. Very pleasurable. No, that was good. We learned something. That the universe is not flat. Christian Keene Scottsdale, do you know that the saguaro... Is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Cacti do not sprout their first arm until they are 75 years old. I'm waiting for that to happen to me as well. I'm due for another arm, and I'm getting real close. No, I didn't know that. But I know who knows that. You know, we have the cactus doctor here. You know the cactus doctor? Well, he's the guy to call when you got a cactus problem. Rene LeBlanc is here. Is he there? Yes, he's in back there. What a coincidence that someone would mention cactus, and we have the cactus doctor right in the audience here. And I'm, how are you? You didn't have to sit way in the corner over there. They put you, why did they put you over there?
I'm good.
Yeah, you're good?
Yes.
Yeah. Were you working today yet? Do you have a...
I work 7 days a week.
7 days a week? Do you get emergency cactus calls?
Many, several, yeah. When they fall over on people's homes, on their cars.
Yeah. They fall on our cars.
Yes.
Is that an insurance problem more than a cactus doctor problem?
It's our problem to remove it off the car.
Yes. When did you start being a cactus doctor?
When I came to the U.S. in 2003. Yeah, that.
From the Philippines?
No, I was a...
I can tell a Philippine accent when I hear one.
I was a cacti horticulturalist in 1971. Came here to do research on saguaros, and was this business kind of fell on my lap.
It fell on your lap? How painful was that?
Pretty painful.
And so what is the single most common problem that people call you about with their, because people are getting in and maybe they're not prepared to actually have a cactus. Mm-hmm.
The most common problem is saguaros leaning because the people allow too much water to get to them. They allow their landscapers to put plants nearby. Yeah. Water is the number one enemy of all saguaros. Out in the desert, they get water once every 3 months. So when they start getting water twice, three times a week, then that's when they start having problems.
So fire the landscaper. If you're gonna, it's either the cactus or the landscaper.
That's right. That's right. We get a lot of work because of landscapers going and damaging the cactus.
So that's a win-win, really. You get to.
Yeah, we love landscapers.
Relay, very nice to talk to you. Cactus doctor, ladies and gentlemen. If you got a cactus, call him. And we'll be back and talk to him. I'm sorry to get more people here, but we, you know, when she blows that horn, I obey. She's got me trained. I don't know how she did. She walked right in here and changed.
You're my pet dwarf.
My life. What?
Nothing.
Okay. She thinks she can just wear them red shoes and I'll do anything she wants. Pretty much true. Okay, so here's a chance for you to play the What Do You Know quiz. Before we can, we have to know who cannot, who can, or who cannot and who can, on a flat universe, play the What Do You Know quiz. Who do I give that to? Where? Whoa, you have it. You were going to do it.
Oh, I'm going to do the rules, right?
Yeah, you got to stand up here. It's the disclaimers. Let's be honest about this.
Okay. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Now, they're telling me to say I'd rather be at the 16th hole at the TP Scottsdale. No, I'd rather be at the Ingles Nest, if that's okay. Thank you. Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations or who are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz, listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. All opinions expressed by What Do You Know are well-reasoned, insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
You were so shy. So take that. I don't want it anymore. Let's see the hands of those of you who want to. All right, I see. Yes, you up there. It's important to you. Yeah, come on down here. Come on down here, dear. Just keep walking down. Come on down, then I don't have to go any further than this. It's about as far as I can get. Good. We'll be right about. Come on, a few more. Okay, we'll be done. Okay, no, you're doing good. You're doing very good. A few more steps in. Hi.
Hi.
You are?
Anjanee.
Anjanee?
Yes.
Your pretty name. Anjanee, what are you doing these days in life?
I'm a physicist.
You're a physicist? Are you particle? Are you particle?
Radiation.
Radiation! Oh boy, a little change of pace. Radiation physics. And give me one good reason why you should play this quiz, Anjanee.
Because it's going to be Valentine's Day.
Okay, that doesn't make any sense, but come on down here. I love that. It's all physics. We'll go up this stairway here because I think it's the closest. And after you, Anjanee, we'll go up there and we'll talk a little physics and we'll play the quiz. Physics is my subject, as you know. You may have heard. Come down here if you would. Yes. A little support here. This is hard to do. Okay. There you go. Is it involved in any of this cosmology?
Just a little bit. A
little bit? Which end of it are you in?
The nothing part.
I should have gone into physics. I could talk like this. But then there's the math requirement. You got to be good at math, right?
I really don't like math, but don't tell him back there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, okay. And then, okay. And you're here to play the quiz.
Yes.
And is this something you wanted to do for a while, or it just occurred to you?
Since 7 o'clock.
Oh, all right. Now, I had a pad here somewhere, and I just didn't find this.
Well, while you're looking for your pad, yes, I will let the people at home know that if they want to play the quiz, they should pick up the phone and dial 480-821-0217. Which spells nothing, not in a kind of particle physics way, nothing, but 480-821-0217.
No E, just an I?
Yeah.
Okay, Anjanee, okay, thank you. All right, and so, and what were you saying about your discipline? There's no math and...
There's plenty of math.
And just a lot of nothing.
I don't like it.
You don't like it, yeah. So typically, what do you do in a day? I mean, do you work in front of a computer or are you...
I go out and measure amounts of radiation used in medical imaging.
Oh, okay. Is that safe to do?
Not for me, but for everyone else, it's safe.
Okay, well, that's good. the things we do for love and work, let's face it. Okay, Anjanee, someone out there plays along with you. That's how this quiz works.
Okay.
And we got people on the line already. What, did you give the number?
I did.
What was it? I'll give it again just to make sure.
480-821-0217.
Well, that's a lot of numbers.
I know.
Is there an easy way to remember that?
No.
Okay. Chuck's on the line from Phoenix. She says, no, it's no. You know, that's fine. Chuck, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Mike. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Oh, I got to ask a question here. I guess that's why you're calling, unless you just want to chat.
Well, I'm game if you are.
Okay. So what are you doing tonight, huh?
Laundry.
Laundry? Do you separate when you do the laundry?
Of course.
You do, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't separate. That's why I don't know how to do it, because my wife won't let me do it. Because I don't
separate.
I
separate the clean clothes from the dirty
I don't
clothes,
believe in...
And I wash the dirty ones.
Oh, yeah, I separate the clean from the dirty. Yeah. All right, here's the question. It's a school question. It's called the... You should know this, I guess. What is the curtain of distraction? The curtain of distraction. You know what that is, Chuck?
Oh, boy. Do I get a hint?
No.
Thanks.
What, wait a minute, does he?
No.
No.
The curtain of distraction.
It has something to do with, I'll tell you, it has something to do with ASU. That's a big hint.
Wow.
Any idea?
I have no idea.
Okay, back to the laundry then.
Yeah, great. Yeah. It was nice talking with you. Thanks.
Remember the softener. Barbara's in Scottsdale. Barbara.
Yes, I'm sorry to say that's a hard question.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, can we try another?
No. Well, why did you call in if you didn't know the answer, though? Was it that whole nothing discussion we had there? That?
No, I just thought that we were going to have new questions for every phone call.
Well, not if we don't answer the old questions.
Well, maybe it's not a legitimate question.
Okay. We're not going to get to this quiz at all, are we? This
is no, I mean...
He warned me about this.
I did.
I'm evaluation of learning and assessment, so some questions are not valid.
Okay. Talk to you later. Jerry's in Phoenix. Jerry, what is the curtain of distraction?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
The curtain of distraction, if I'm not mistaken,
yes,
is a curtain that a bunch of crazy ASU students put up in the stands.
All right, you got it. Yes, you're right. That's what it is. Okay. Jerry, this is Angini. Jerry Angini. Angini Jerry.
Hello.
Hey, Jerry.
Hello, Angini.
Okay. One question is going to take the quiz, I think, or maybe two. Let's see. How it goes. What categories do we have there?
Choose carefully. The categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Okay. Jerry, we'll let you pick it. What would you like?
You want to run this by me again? I've never heard that list before.
Okay.
He's never heard
Angini,
the list
I'll
before.
Angini, I'll let you pick it. What would you like?
People.
People. Okay.
All people. Right. That's good.
Here we go. Of the 50% of parents who occasionally raid their kids' piggy banks, what ratio use it for their own personal needs? Is it a third, two-fifths, or one-tenth? One-tenth. Half of all parents raid their kids' piggy banks.
Well, why else would they raid them if not for their own use?
For the good of the world. Donations.
I don't believe that. What do you think, Anthony?
Children's College Fund, maybe?
I think... two-fifths.
You said what? Two-fifths? Mm-hmm. Two-fifths is right. Two-fifths of them are using it for their own personal... So that's not so bad. Three-fifths aren't.
They won.
Yay, math.
Oh, we can get another one here, can't we?
No.
Oh, okay. You won the quiz. Unbelievable. What an amount of effort went into that.
Angini, you've won two of Betty's paletas, a traditional fresh fruit and cream prop from Betty's home state of Michoacan, Mexico. The bite means it's okay to eat. Then take your car to Santan Ford in Gilbert, Arizona for an oil change, along with a Mustang t-shirt, and enliven your office space with a handmade totem desk piece, an HD radio, and Tumblr, all from KJZZ Radio.
That's a lot for what they did.
Yeah, I know. Jerry, you and three friends will be golfing at the San Marcos Golf Resort on the newly renovated course, which first opened in 1913. Then learn about all things Arizona from the seasoned traveler in Arizona for Dummies, and treat your Valentine's sweet tooth with a collectible M&M dispenser from KJZZ Radio. Congratulations to you both.
Oh, boy. What a payoff. Like winning the lottery. Thank you. Yeah. Hang on there, Jerry. Make sure you get that stuff. Thanks for playing.
All right.
Hey, if any of you think you're Michael's longest or oldest fan, you should let us know. You could submit your entry to What Do You Know's a longest listener contest at notmuch.com. Just go to our contact page and send us your story with the subject line, contest. Michael Feldman's...
Or longest
or shortest. Probably not shortest. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI. That's Public Radio International. Michael Feldman is our producer international, and this is PRI, Public Radio International. Live from the beautiful Chandler Center for the Arts in Chandler, Arizona, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI. That's Public Radio International. John Tulin's on piano, Jeff Hammond's on bass, Perry Sen is on drums, I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, it's a performance from Celebration Guns, plus anthropologist Donald Johansson and chef Danielle Morris of Ernest. Support for What Do You Know comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who wonders who left the waste management open. It's Michael Feldman.
Yes, Surrey. We got a great band coming up here, a local band. You're going to enjoy Celebration Guns. And Justin, are you the spokesman?
Yeah, I'll take
Are you the one. Founding father of Celebration Guns?
Yeah, I think I can take on that.
The initiator?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you guys all in other bands or something and just got together fairly recently?
Yeah, me and my friend Ryan here played in bands years ago, and then we kind of started our own thing and met these other guys from Craigslist, and it's a popular way to do it nowadays.
That worked for you, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that was fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And weren't you in some kind of, like, don't they have like a band lottery here where you got to form other bands and then spawn other bands?
Right, yeah. They had 25 musicians get together and kind of were randomly drawn to write songs, three songs, and learn one cover later that same day and perform them.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Phoenix. So I ended up in a band with Jim Adkins from Jimmy Eat World.
Uh-huh.
So
oh, really?
That was kind of awesome because I'm a big fan of them. So that was a really good time.
How were the songs, though? Were they just?
I think they turned out well. We're working on maybe recording them and listening.
So it's going to break up your own band because
I don't know, but it's, you know, it's coming.
It's a fragile world, the band world, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Who knows?
Can you introduce the guys in the band for us?
Right? This is Ryan Miller on bass right here. And
Ryan Miller on bass.
Chris Blanco on guitar. And Timothy O'Brien back here on drums.
Okay. And, you know, it seems to me like music these days, it's hard that you want to put a label on things, but we've sort of moved beyond labels. Right? There's so many different influences in music and stuff. What would you characterize yourself as, your band as?
Oh, that question. Well, let's see. I'm thinking a little, some people say indie rock.
Yeah.
A little emo music, if anyone is familiar with that style I don't know, 10 or 20 years ago. We're trying to bring that back a little bit.
Yeah, I was emo 10 or 20 years ago.
Yeah, and then we call ourselves a jungle pop sometimes. The drums get a little progressive and kind of pounding. And I don't know. Just
well, let's hear all that sounds. What's this song going to be?
This song's called Have It Your Way.
Sounds good.
Celebration Day.
you call it, but I like it. And that sounded kind of, there's an Irish thing going on there, too. Celtic, a little, isn't there? Am I wrong about that?
I'm sorry?
There's something Irish in that as well.
I'll take that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it came from, but I'm part Irish, so it's possible.
That's what it is. That part was coming on that one. That was nice. I could see marching or, you know.
Yeah, we got an O'Brien back here on drums, so.
Oh, okay. That's it. It's the O'Brien influence on that tune. That's very nice. That's from the album Wish I Was High. No. What's the album called? Your new album is called?
We're actually just about to go into studio and work on it. Local producer Bob
Hogue. I got a title for you. What do you think?
Hmm?
Wish I Was High? Oh, I don't know. I'm a funny guy. And so you have an EP out, don't you?
Yes, we do. We have a CD back there. We're going to play a song that's not on it, but we do have it on cassette. If anyone here still has a cassette player.
Yeah. Do you do cassette releases?
We've done a couple of cassette releases. There's a local label called Rubber Brother Records that puts out some bands on cassette, mostly more garage-sounding, punkish bands. So we kind of just snuck on there and did a few ourselves.
Well, that's way cool. That's way cooler than vinyl, I think. Cassette is much cooler.
Yeah, well, and we can also afford cassettes, so.
I'm into cassette.
That works the best.
Okay, this song is not on there, but it's called?
It's on a cassette. It's called The Volunteer.
Okay, great. We'll
Thank you.
Yes, celebration time. Thank you, guys.
The O'Brien sound of Celebration Guns, ladies and gentlemen. They don't know they're Irish, but they are. Oh, I like it. And you get that on cassette at Rubber Brother Records. Okay, say that 10 times fast. Is that tape? Yeah, Rubber Brother Records. Justin Weir, Timothy O'Brien, Ryan Miller, Chris Blanco. Okay. And you can also see them at the Crescent Ballroom and Urban Outfitters some nights. So. Oh, yeah, okay. Well, it's somebody's birthday. Whose birthday is it? I'll tell you, it's Lucy, our combined mother, the mother of us all. Lucy is only 40 years old, and she looks pretty good for 40. The man who discovered her, Donald Johansson, is here with us tonight. And we're going to celebrate her birthday. She's 3,040,000 years old, I think. About that? There he is.
Terrific. Wow, what a crowd.
Yeah.
Gee.
Yeah, she looks good
for
40. Who knew
people were interested in old women like this?
Yeah.
Terrific.
What was it? I mean, now it's like everybody's history, knowing Lucy, and she's kind of a common, a known thing now.
Yes, she is.
But what was that like when you first saw those fragments and thought maybe they all came from one individual? What was the feeling like?
Well, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, it was cool.
Yeah.
This is something I thought about since I was about 13 years old.
Yeah.
I read a book by Thomas Henry Huxley, who was a good friend of Chuck Darwin.
Uh-huh.
You know, yesterday was Charles Darwin's birthday.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Born in 1809. Yesterday we celebrated his birthday.
Yeah.
But I read a book called Man's Place in Nature.
Mm-hmm.
Not really, you know, PC. Mm-hmm. Now it would be person's place in nature.
Whatever, yeah.
But it was man's place in nature.
Yeah.
And it told me that we our closest relatives. I thought Uncle Arvid was my closest relative. But chimpanzees were our closest relative.
Yeah.
And as a 13-year-old, I thought, boy, this is really cool. Wait till I tell all my Catholic friends.
Yeah.
And so I did on the way to school. And, you know, they didn't. They thought, no, this can't be true. So I said, yeah. And I thought, geez, what a cool thing to go out and find fossils like this.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I went to graduate school at the University of Chicago, suffered through that.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. University of Chicago people here?
Yeah.
Right.
So you were in Ethiopia.
I was in Ethiopia. And
what is the area that you were in?
It's known as the Afar Triangle, mm-hmm. where the nomadic Muslim people live, and mm-hmm. it was a place called Hadar.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out on a Sunday morning, looked over my...
Did you have a reason for being in that spot? Was it...
Oh, yeah. They were looking for me in Chicago.
But had other things been found in that area?
No. Actually, nothing.
Yeah. So what were you doing there?
I got lost.
Seriously?
No, there was a French geologist who had been stumbling around the desert and found a bunch of bones. And he came to me and he said, you know, we have found all of these bones. You should come with me to the Afar.
Really?
So I went with him.
Yeah.
And it was littered with bones. And I thought, there's got to be human fossils here. And I started looking in earnest in 1973. And lo and behold, a year later, came across 40% of a skeleton that's become popularly known as Lucy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I read some quote somewhere. Where was it? I think I got it here somewhere, if I can find
Which
it.
Which one of these is Lawrence Krauss drink out of? I want to be careful.
Yeah, don't use that one. Don't use that one. Here it is. Do you say Johansson or Johansson?
It's Johansson, but we all say Johansson. That's why I always make reservations at restaurants under the name Johansson.
Okay.
They say, oh, hi, Joe. How are you?
All right. This is a dialogue between you and White. Who is White?
White had nothing to do with this.
Okay, but the conversation is interesting, not White. Johansson, you know this is a real mess. Two kinds in South Africa, two kinds in East Africa, now maybe two kinds in Ethiopia. White says, maybe one kind in Ethiopia, maybe two kinds. That makes six different kinds of hominids. Doesn't make any sense at all. What would you want to do, reorganize it? Would you be willing? I would. It might require the naming of a new species. It probably would. That would raise one hell of a stink. Yup.
Boy, it did.
Yeah.
And it was only one species.
Yeah.
And that was a really cool thing. And this was a species, like we're a species, right?
Yeah.
We're all homos. I mean, homo sapiens.
Right.
She was Australopithecus, and she was Australopithecus afarensis, and she lived for about 800,000 years. We've been around for 150 or 200,000 years, and we think that we're going to be here forever.
Yeah. What was it controversial even making her Australopithecus or determining that she was? No,
I think it wasn't controversial at all that she was called Australopithecus. It was controversial that I placed her at a particular place on the human family tree that led to a whole bunch of branches, most of which died out. One evolved into us. And her age was somewhat controversial at the beginning, being 3.2 million years, and we had to determine using, you know, things like Lawrence Krauss does, to determine her age in terms of millions of years, and she turned out to be 3.2 million years.
How does one do that with bones?
Well, you collect, I have to say this very carefully, volcanic ash, okay? And you take that ash into a laboratory, and you put it into a vacuum, and you take radio waves. Am I sounding like Lawrence?
Yeah, pretty much.
And you stimulate this, and you agitate the atoms, and it melts the ash, and it gives off gases and water and other sorts of things, and you look for atoms of argon gas that people in this audience probably have in their double-pane windows at home, which is argon gas.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those noble gases. It's an inert. It doesn't combine with anything. Yeah. And you count the number of atoms. Well, you don't actually stand there and count them, but you use a mass spectrometer. And then
that's the way I would have done it.
Come
think of it. And well, it's the most logical thing to do.
Yeah, well, that's what we thought.
Yeah.
And the more atoms there are of argon, the older the rock is. And you can date rocks from the beginning of the planet, 4.5 billion years ago.
Yeah.
As opposed to carbon-14, which is, of course, a depleted metal.
Yeah. Did you find any other individuals besides her in that area?
We did. We now have almost 400 specimens of Lucy's species over 800,000 years of time.
No kidding.
Yeah. Nothing as complete as Lucy, but we now have complete male and a complete female skull, lots of hand bones, back bones, arm bones, leg bones.
And are they related?
Yeah. They're
the
all
same species.
Yeah. They all look like Lucy's bones, so they belong to the same species. And they were very widespread over Africa. We know them from Ethiopia, Tanzania, Kenya, and all the way out in the center of North Africa in a place called Chad. So she was a successful species.
Now, I know there's a difference, I don't know exactly why, but between the hominid in general and a human, when they actually became human, she is a human.
Well, we would place her on the human family tree.
Yeah.
Because if we saw her tonight when we were walking to our cars, okay, wouldn't that be cool? I think I did last Friday night after a little heavy drinking with my graduate students.
Oh, yeah.
But,
well, you got to with graduate students.
She would be walking like we walk, okay, on two legs, like these ostriches behind us, right?
Yeah.
They walk on two legs. They're totally unrelated to us.
Of course.
It's what's called parallelism. But at any rate, you knew that.
But, well, I didn't, but I could.
But she would be short. She'd only be about 3.5 feet tall. You were talking about dwarfs before, you know.
I wasn't.
Well, he was. You know, somebody told me that story about the car crash in Los Angeles. You know that one where the two cars crash in the intersection and the two guys are sitting in the car and they're steaming and finally the door opens and a dwarf walks out. And he walks over to the next car. And the guy rolled down the window and he says, "I'm not happy." He says, "Oh, which one are you?" So, I'm sorry. But she would be very short. She would have a brain with the capacity of your morning coffee cup, while your brain, I didn't bring my calipers, but actually, you look pretty large-brained, actually.
I am.
And
well, good, it does
would
make.
Be about 4 or 5 times as large. So she was very ape-like. She had a projecting face. She was probably hairy and very different from us.
Yeah.
But because she walked upright, we knew that from the pelvis. We knew that from the knee. We knew that from the ankle. She belongs in the family of humans rather than the family of apes.
Yeah. So what part of her would you like to have had that you didn't find?
The face.
Oh, of course.
Because her face had come out, her skull had come out early, rolled down a slope, broke up, rainstorms washed away, you know, her cheekbones, her forehead, and nasal area, And it wasn't until about 10 years ago that we actually found a complete female skull.
Yeah.
So we now know pretty much what she looks like.
So this one, this is a construction.
That's a total reconstruction of Lucy, mirror imaging right and left sides. Mm-hmm. And that's actually sitting in the Ethiopian National Museum.
Yeah. And is she back there now?
Yes.
Is she in Ethiopia?
I believe very strongly that these fossils should be in the country of discovery. I mean, here in Arizona, we'd be very unhappy if some Hungarian came over and took all of the pottery and wonderful Native American remains back to their country, wouldn't they? They belong here.
Yeah.
So.
And vice versa, if you raided all the Hungarian stuff.
Yeah, right. So I had Lucy in the United States for 5 years alone.
Was that when you were at Cleveland? Or?
I did that when I was at the Cleveland Museum of Natural History and put an interesting multidisciplinary team together. You know, someone studied the teeth, somebody studied the toe bones, somebody studied the finger bones, somebody studied the vertebra. That's how specialized they are. And published a long, boring monograph on her that's available to all scientists.
Yeah. Speaking of controversies, as we did, were there controversies along the way as to what you did and what you found, what you actually had found? And
oh, enormous debate. Controversies. Yeah. There was
how annoying was that?
How what? Oh, it was annoying. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, some of those people aren't around anymore. So I don't know how that happened. But we had bigger calibers.
Yeah.
So there was
what was the biggest bone of contention?
The biggest bone of contention.
Yes.
Was whether she could walk fully upright as we walk today. And
is that a deciding factor as to her human...
Whether she should be on the human tree or the ape tree. Because if you had found a fragment of her lower jaw, or mandible, as we call it, with a few teeth in it, you might think that it was an ape. Mm-hmm. That is very similar to things that were like 10, 12, 14 million years old. Mm-hmm. But with the pelvis and the knee and the ankle, mm-hmm. we suggested that functionally she was upright walking when she was on the ground. Mm-hmm. And there was another group at Stony Brook University on the East Coast that suggested that she did a lot of climbing in the trees. In fact, that she probably spent most of her time in the trees and that she walked around with a bent knee and a bent hip, trying to carry home groceries from AJ's, carrying two heavy bags with your bent knees and your bent hips, you won't make it to your car.
Now, my mother did it. I don't know.
Okay. So there was this huge controversy. People wouldn't talk to each other. People would go up to meetings, you know, go to meetings. We have all of these meetings all over the world, American Anthropological Association, American Association of Physical Anthropologists, American whatever.
Yeah.
And people would give their paper, and they'd leave the room. You know, or they wouldn't talk to each other. Or they would say, you don't want to go to graduate school with that guy. So, but ultimately what happened was, you know, the Leakey family, which is a fairly famous family over there in East Africa. Mm-hmm. There was Louis Leakey and Mary Leakey, who worked at Olduvai. And Mary Leakey, just after Lucy was found a layer of volcanic, here it is again, volcanic ash that had footprints in it that were 3.7 million years old. And you can imagine, right? Did they wear shoes back then? No. So they left actual anatomical impressions
of their feet
mm-hmm. in this moist volcanic ash. And their footprint left in that sand is just like our footprints that we leave in the sand when we walk along a beach. And that was the smoking gun.
And that is related, that
the
age?
Same species. How do we know? Species. Not because of the foot bones, but because of the jaws and teeth that were associated with the foot bones that were identical to the ones from where I found Lucy.
That's amazing.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. So you prevailed.
We did.
And Lucy prevailed.
Lucy is still, the go-to fossil. I mean, when you're sitting around talking about something new, something that's been discovered recently that's on the front page of the New York Times, for example, someone might not remember Australopithecus afarensis, but when someone says, oh, this new fossil's older than Lucy, they go all of a sudden, oh, older than Lucy, wow. So, and by the way, I'm going to be in your neck of the woods on March 3rd for National Geographic. For National Geographic Live, I'm going to be lecturing in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, you are? Oh.
Yeah.
They're filming that as well?
Pardon me?
Are they filming it? Or?
I'm sure they are, but it's just a public evening lecture called Geographic Live.
Oh, how cool, how cool.
So I hope some of our listeners will be there.
Yeah. You must have been a pretty young anthropologist. How old were you when you discovered Lucy?
Well, we all know that she was found 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And now I have to tell you, I found her when I was 31.
Yeah.
I'd like to say I found her when I was 5, but I found her... When I was 31, so I had just come out of University of Chicago. I was in, as they say, newly minted PhD. Mm-hmm. I did an incredibly interesting PhD thesis. I was going to bring a copy for you. 400 pages on chimpanzee teeth.
Yeah.
Really, just, wow. It's a page turner.
So you figured that was going to be your future, was chimpanzee teeth.
Soon to be a film.
Yeah. So, but what does that do? Now, I mean, you probably will not find such a thing again in your career. It happened early in your career. Does that have a kind of a... What is that like as an anthropologist?
Well, it was exhilarating. Yeah. It was, you know, I was young and a little cocky in those days. And
these days, too.
It's yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I see there's one right there on the front of the stage. It really sort of catapulted me into the eye of the, whatever it's called, target. In terms of paleoanthropological discoveries. Mm-hmm. And what it did to me, which was totally unanticipated, I hadn't thought about it because I was a university graduate, I was a young assistant professor, mm-hmm. was it really brought me into the public's eye. Mm-hmm. And like Lawrence, who was up here before, we share this great thirst for trying to bring our studies, our discoveries, our science to the great public out there, mm-hmm. in a way that they can understand it and they can share in some of the excitement. I think hiding behind jargon, hiding behind the ivory tower, is robbing people of really enlightening them about the knowledge that science brings us.
Yeah, yeah. Are you still in the field these days? Do you go out there and in the mud and the muck and the wind rain?
It's interesting. I'm not in the field at the moment. I was there a few years ago, but the Institute of Human Origins that I was founding director of here at this great university, Arizona State University. Mm-hmm. We have a team of scientists in Ethiopia. They're probably just getting out of bed or getting ready to get out of bed in the morning and start their search. And I can say, I can't give details, but I can say that I got an email the other day. They're making some interesting discoveries, and there'll be some fascinating announcements later in the spring. But we're still looking. There are more bones to find.
Yeah. And let's say I'm listening to all this, and I think, boy, I would like to take his class.
Yeah.
You know, some kid out there, I was fascinated in this sort of thing. Can people actually come and learn from you? Can they get into your, or do you have to be like a graduate?
Oh, heavens no. I'm done with graduate students. I mean, really.
You just drink with them now. No, that's about it.
They all want to be like me. Is
yeah. Yeah,
no,
right.
No, I teach an online course called, appropriately, Human Origins here at ASU, which is a very popular course. And I've written a number of popular books at the moment. I'm working on my autobiography, which a number of people are very nervous about. I can imagine who that is, and but they can take the course online.
Oh, cool.
I miss the classroom, I must say. I'm a great convert to online teaching, but I miss the interaction with students. I've had some wonderful students, not just as graduate students, but as undergraduates. And the undergraduates seem to be just so totally open to new ideas and totally open to debating and sitting with you around coffee. And the graduate students, like I was when I was a graduate student, we were so busy and so worried about getting our PhDs that we were always studying.
Yeah.
And I love the interaction with undergraduates because that's where those minds are so fertile and open.
Yeah. So graduate school can actually inhibit it.
It can, yes.
What you might achieve.
Fear is a big thing in graduate school. Yeah. We have a pretty receptive program, though, at the Institute. We work very closely with our graduate students. Happy to say everyone that's graduated with us now has a tenure-track job teaching paleoanthropology.
Well, that's fantastic. And how was the birthday party? Did you see some old friends attending Lucy's 40th?
How was the birthday party? A lot of old friends, yes. She doesn't get out much, so as you can imagine. But it was on the 24th of November, last November, and it was great to sit and reminisce and reflect on what this means, what it's meant to me in my life, and what it means to us in terms of understanding who we are, where we've come from, and how we fit into the natural world.
Yeah. And have there been any usurpers in the interim saying that she is not, in fact, the oldest
Well, she's not the oldest.
Yeah.
There are other fossils now that have been found that take us back almost to 6 million years. They're fragments, and there's a lot of debate about where they fit on the family tree, but if they fit on the family tree.
She's the most complete.
But no, there are other ones at 4.4 million that's even more complete than Lucy, but there's a great debate as to whether or not it really is on the human family tree.
Right.
So Lucy is I think, the real spark that ignited this rush to Ethiopia, particularly the Afar region that I spoke about, where numerous expeditions have come and worked. And most appropriately and most satisfying to me is we now have more than a half a dozen Ethiopian scholars who were born and raised in Ethiopia and who have gotten their PhDs and who are now conducting their very own expeditions and making their own exciting discoveries.
Fantastic. Donald, thank you for joining us. Professor, I should say. Great pleasure meeting you.
Thanks very much.
Donald Johanson, ladies and gentlemen. From the origins at ASU. And there's much that you can read about him and what he's done, and certainly about Lucy. Fascinating stuff. Pretty amazing. Okay, then. What? What are you saying?
Well, I think we're supposed to take a break now.
Take a break now? Yeah. Well, are you producing the show now? Or
no,
what?
They're just telling me, but I don't know. Sarah's looking at me like I'm supposed to know what's going on, and I don't.
Okay. Why don't we take a break right
now? Yeah, let's take a break.
Let's go to break.
And we do that when I say,
yes.
You're listening to Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI. That's Public Radio International.
Okay. Sorry to step on you.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Audience, you out there.
What?
Aren't you going to go out and talk to the people?
I think it's time for some anthropology of your own.
What?
You got to go talk to the people.
I'm going
to
look for fragments in the audience?
Yeah.
There's plenty out there.
All right.
See if they're
all right, we're going back in the audience here, ladies and gentlemen, here in Chandler. We're having a wonderful time. We've learned so much. But we didn't learn why people just all ran out of the auditorium. I thought there was an alarm that went off or something like that. I can't quite understand what just happened there, but that's okay. Someone, yes, yes. Sure, come on down here. He's going to straighten us out here, this young man. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I just really like NPR and KJZZ. And it's really cool to be here. Yeah.
How old are you?
13.
13 is not our usual demographic, you know. So could you try to dare tell your friends that you listen to NPR or public radio?
They don't really know what it is, but all my teachers are very impressed.
Are you at the prep school, too?
Yeah, Scottsdale Prep.
Doing at the prep school?
Latin.
That's your thing?
It's pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Learning it's not spoken in many parts of the world, you know.
Learning a dead language is pretty frustrating.
I know. I learned Hebrew. You know? And I learned like ancient Hebrew, because a very old teacher I had teaching that. But, you know, it comes in handy for conversation sometimes. So. Yeah. What grade are you in then?
Seventh.
Seventh grade. That's a good grade.
Yeah.
Play any sports or anything too? Or?
I play tennis.
Tennis? You're a tennis player. Cool.
Yep. I'm on the school team, so yeah.
You more doubles or single?
I like doubles, definitely.
And musical instrument?
Recorder.
You play the recorder. Okay, well, it's a very esoteric individual. And your name is?
Kevin.
Kevin?
Shum.
Kevin, very nice to meet you.
You too.
You are the future, Kevin. No pressure, but I feel confident that you'll do well in it. All right, hi, nice to see you. Okay, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Yeah. And then this is very pretty, the silver thing there.
Thank you.
Yes. And so what do you do in life as we know it?
I'm writing a book.
And what is it? May I ask, or does that kill it if you tell someone?
Well, if you promise to buy one.
Sure. Sure.
It's the very first time that there's a specifically for bowed strings an assignment notebook. Hello.
There is an assignment notebook.
Most kids that take piano lessons have a book that their teacher writes their assignments in.
Okay.
There's nothing in the English-speaking languages for bowed strings, violin, viola, cello.
Oh, bowed. I thought you said boat string. Bowed strings.
Okay. Yeah, the things that go back and forth.
Yeah. Jeff, you'd read a book like that, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would.
Jeff, he says yes, he would.
Sold.
Okay. All right, I'll get my, and your name is?
Sue Joy Spencer.
Okay, so look for that Bowed Strings by Sue Joy Spencer. How are you? Oh, you're a VIP.
I am.
I'm allowed to talk to VIPs? I don't know.
It's your show. You can do what you want to do.
How are you, Joe?
Good, good. How are you?
Do you wear that name tag everywhere or what?
They gave it to me.
Yeah. Hmm. That's good.
You're standing in my row.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sit down there. It's the VIP row. It doesn't seem very special or any different from the other rows, but I... Did you pay, like, big bucks to sit in this row?
No.
Did they give you the seats because you are a VIP?
No. It's got everything to do with you, I guess.
You know what? Why you earn the honor of being a VIP? What do you know?
Do I know why I have the honor?
Yeah.
I do.
What is it?
This lady.
Oh.
He wanted to come. He's never even heard your show before.
And obviously never again. I mean, I get the feeling, probably. Lisa, so you brought him in here, Lisa. He's having the greatest time of his life.
For part of my Christmas present. So he bought the tickets for part of my Christmas.
Oh, thank you. It was very very nice of you to put up with this. And it gets better and better. We're not nearly through yet. Okay. There's a big VIP section. I'm going to go beyond the VIPs and see the people who are... Here's a regular person who came to the show. Well, let's see what he's like. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
And you are?
Peter.
Peter, and Peter, are you? What do you do in life as we know it?
Well, I could probably call retired.
Retired? And what did you probably retire from?
Well, I was in business.
Yeah. What sort of business?
In the office supply and use of consumables business.
Yeah. Yes. So are you happy to be out of office supplies now?
Yes, I am. Very much so.
Yes. Have you gone into something else?
No, not really. Well, just being retired.
Yeah. What do you do when you're retired, though? Because people telling me, you know, people say, why don't you retire? When are you going to retire? I can't even think about it because I have no retirement skills. Like, do you...
There's no manuals.
I know, but what do you do with your time? Like,
well, I look after other small business enterprises I'm busy with.
Oh, you do? So you do, like...
Oh, yes. I keep busy with some financial things and families, grandkids...
Is he underfoot a lot? Do you know this gentleman here?
No, he has his little office and I have mine, and we just separate for the day.
So you separated after he retired, in other words?
Oh, well, you could put it that way if you wish.
What are you doing in your little office while he's in his little office?
Oh, I enjoy scrapbooking, I read, I sew a little bit, and I write.
Do you ever run into each other when leaving your little offices?
Well, sometimes I call him on the phone from my office to his one because I don't want to shout up the steps.
Does that actually improve relationship? Because I find that when I talk to my wife on the phone, she's really nice to me. Well, and that doesn't, I'm not that she isn't always in person, but, you know, okay, so it sort of improves things, doesn't it?
Yeah, and sometimes...
You don't want to answer every call, though.
No.
Just
let it ring. Sometimes she can hear it ringing, though.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Her little office.
Just tied up doing other, preoccupied with other important matters. Yeah.
If you don't answer, she's going to come banging on the door and say, why don't you pick up the phone?
Happened. That's right. Yeah.
And so, and your name is?
My name is Peg.
There it is. A little office. A solution, ladies and gentlemen, to retirement. What? What did I do? That's the penalty horn. Okay, let's play a quiz then. When in doubt, always play a quiz, and I think that someone here probably... Hi, how are you? Good to see you. It's tough because, you know, you don't want... But look how nice he is. Look how nice he is. Look at, this is a nice man. You want to do things for a nice man. You know, you put on a nice shirt, a nice pair of pants. Very nice. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Are you as nice as you appear to be?
Ask my wife.
Is he as nice as he appears to be? Yeah, she says you're very nice.
Thank you.
You don't have to use the little office thing when you're retired.
No.
And you are?
I'm Randy Clausen.
Randy Clausen, what do you do, Randy?
I work for the electric utility that's providing the wonderful lights for us today.
Nice job.
Thank you.
I thought those are just holes in the ceiling here in the Sun Valley. Randy, right?
Yes.
Give me one good reason, Randy, you should play this quiz.
I have been to the highest ski resort in the world.
And?
It's called
Chocolate. Got nothing on this? You know, what do you say?
It's called Chocolataya in Bolivia, about 17,500 feet. So that's my claim to fame.
And that's your reason for wanting to be on the quiz?
Well, yeah.
Okay, that's really a good one. Come on, 17,000 feet. I appreciate that. That's pretty high. Okay. In Bolivia, you say. Come on down here. Randy. Go up these stairs here. This is only about 15 feet. But you should enjoy it anyway. All right. There's John on the piano. Doing a good job, John. All right. Have a seat there, Randy. So skiing is your passion?
No, actually, I went up just to do tubing on the snow.
You tubed from 17,000 feet?
It was hard snow.
Was it a death trip or what was it?
It seemed like it, yes.
Yeah. That must have been terrifying.
You know, I really don't ski because when I attempted that up at sunrise, I couldn't get off the bunny hill.
And yet you went up 17,000 feet in Bolivia?
I did.
And you tubed down it?
Yeah, it was crazy? Fun. We were crazy, yes.
Yeah. Was this just not recently, was it?
No, this was back when I was about 21 years old.
Oh, geez. Well, 21, that makes sense then. I thought you did it recently or something.
Well, I'd like to go back.
Yeah. Well, have you skied since then or tubed since then? Or
just the bunny hill.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a sad story, actually. I mean, got all this tubing out of the way at age 21, and now he's working for the electric company and... Not the electric company, what is it?
I work for Arizona Public Service Company.
Public Service Company.
Yes.
So that's a public service. That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
It's a great company.
Randy, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to write it down here. It's for tax purposes in case you win anything. you have to report all of it. Randy, you know how this works, this quiz works?
I do.
It's a collaboration. Someone out there plays along with you.
I'm hoping somebody smart will call in.
Okay, let's see. That could happen. How would they do that then, Sarah?
People at home who want to play the quiz, just pick up the phone and dial 480-821-0217, and you ask them a qualifying question of your choice.
Okay, here's the question. It's Love Sack. Explain. That's the question. Love-Sack, S-A-C, explain what a love sack is, I guess. Okay. Anyhow, let's go to the phones right now, and they're not ringing off the love sack. I think it was something in 50 Shades of Grey, wasn't it?
I do not know.
I don't know either. I don't know how this question got in here or something. It's very titillating, though. Todd is on the line from Gilbert. Hey, Todd.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Fabulous.
Yeah. How's your weekend so far?
Oh, it's getting better.
Getting better? Why? What's happening?
The weather's great. I don't have to work till Tuesday.
Till Tuesday? They told you not to come back in, or what?
They did. Yeah. We don't want to see you till Tuesday.
Cool. What kind of work are you in?
Electrician.
Oh, cool. Well, you got some time off. Well, how are you going to spend that time?
Just enjoying the weather.
Enjoying the weather. I like your style, Todd.
Celebrate my wife's birthday.
Oh, cool. All right, tell me what this means, love sack.
I wish I was a better help for your contestant in there.
Okay. Well, let me give you a different question then, because it's kind of stupid anyway. All right. If your zip code is 85253, you are what?
85253. You're in Phoenix.
Sorry. That's not it, Todd.
All right.
And you didn't know Love Sack. I can't give you any more tries here. Sorry. I like you. Okay, thanks, though. Let's go to Dan, who's in Tucson. Dan.
Hi.
You can tell me either what Love Sack means or what 85253 means.
I'm going to guess Avondale.
Avondale?
Yes.
I'd say you're wrong. Thanks, though, Dan.
Thanks.
Okay. Maybe get a different phone. That would be interesting. Ryan's in Phoenix. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm going pretty good. It's going pretty good. You know, how about yourself?
Doing great.
Good, good. Got big plans tonight, going out or anything? Or?
No, not tonight. Just eating ice cream.
Eating ice cream. What about Valentine's Day? You got a little thing planned for Valentine's Day, Brian?
Yeah, I think tomorrow night, take a nice lady out to a French restaurant.
You'll take a nice lady out?
Yeah, to a French restaurant.
Cool. Does she know who she is yet, or? Would you be surprised for some nice lady?
Yeah, she knows who she is.
Okay. Lovesack or 85253 zip code?
I think I know both.
You know both? Go ahead.
Well, a Lovesack, that's the big, giant, luxury beanbag, correct?
Oh, yeah, it's a big beanbag. Okay, that's a relief. Thank you. We'll set, that's good. We'll stop right there. All right, Ryan. And Randy. Randy, Ryan.
Hey, thanks.
Ryan, Randy.
Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
Okay, so you guys are a team right now, okay?
Okay.
You cooperate on all these things. We have various categories, don't we, Sarah?
We do, and yes. I think it's going to be a one for again. So the categories to choose from.
Oh, no, we got more time than that.
We got food coming, too, though.
I know, we got time.
Okay. Yeah. So the categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Okay.
Shall I say that again more slowly?
No, that's fine. Ryan, what would you like?
Let's do people.
People it is. Are office people most likely to gossip about which of the following? A, coworkers, friends, or family? When they gossip around the office at what used to be the water cooler, what are they most likely to gossip about? Coworkers, friends, or family?
Well, I know at my office it's usually family. But Ryan?
Ryan?
Yeah, in my office, coworkers.
Whoa!
Well, whose office are we going to go with?
I think the audience likes Ryan's.
Yeah.
That's right, coworkers.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you, Ryan.
And family is a big one, too. All right. That would be?
That's one right, and the categories left are current events, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Randy?
I think we ought to try current events.
Current events right out of the news. During the Super Bowl run-up, where in the Phoenix scene were Kim and Kanye spotted? It's made all the news all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
The spot they picked to hang out in around here. At 159th and I-10, I think is the one.
Would it work if we gave a city?
What? Well, yeah, in Phoenix. They were in Phoenix.
Yeah, it's the Waffle House.
Waffle House is right.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yes.
All right. That would be...
Two right.
All right.
Categories left are places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Ryan, back to you. What would you like?
Things you should have learned in school.
All right, school it is, for all the beans. What city was very nearly called Pumpkinville?
Pumpkinville?
Pumpkinville. Because of all the wild gourds.
Gosh.
Along the Salt River.
Oh, well, I want to say it. You know, Randy?
Large city, metropolis.
My guess that it might be the state capital of Phoenix, maybe?
You think Phoenix was almost called Pumpkinville because of all the gourds?
Yeah.
That's correct. Congratulations. Oh. Holy cow, you guys are too good.
Randy, you'll be done yet. Wisconsin native Dean LaPlante's D.C. Steakhouse on downtown Chandler's main square. Keep track of your wine glass with a set of four wine charms from KJZZ Radio. And read under the covers with a book light from the Arizona Community Foundation, which is putting Arizona first. Ryan, you can get in the proper mood for Valentine's Day with a candle and lotion from One Wing Boutique in downtown Chandler. Then treat your car to an oil change from Santan Ford. Get out on the road using the Arizona Highways Guide and listen to our show on an HD radio along with a Tumblr from KJZZ Radio. Congratulations.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Michael. Very much. Very nice to meet you. Thanks for playing. Ryan, hang out. Make sure you get that stuff. Thanks for playing. Good job. All right. From the restaurant Ernest in town, now formerly Cork, they rebranded to Ernest now. It's a great place. We were there last night. Would you welcome, please, pastry chef Danielle Morris of Ernest. Joining us right now with one of our very own pastry creations, even as we speak. So who's doing the cooking now?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I'm really excited.
Really? Oh, look at this.
Find out.
Whoa. These are beautiful. What have you got here for me? This is very kind of you. One of these is for you, I think. Which one should I give to her? What are these things? Tell me.
This one is a house-made Snickers with cashews.
Snickers?
Yeah.
So you upscale the Snickers bar. What happened to the Snickers bar? It looks gorgeous, actually.
It's different layers, so I make the bottom layer out of milk chocolate and peanut butter, mm-hmm. and then there's the nougat layer that has cashews chopped up and folded in there, and then there's like a chocolate Bavarian layer, mm-hmm. and then more cashews, and then the whole thing's covered in chocolate.
Can't go wrong with those ingredients. I'll save this for you. You want this one? Yeah, okay, that's what she wants. And what we have here is
This is kind of like our signature dessert.
Ah. Should I sign it then?
we were formerly known as Cork, and that was kind of the signature dessert that I did, banana cream pie.
This is amazing.
Thank you.
Oh, I love it.
Thanks.
Oh, my mother made it with the Jell-O.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. This has gelatin in it, but no Jell-O.
Oh, yeah. That's right, all in the box, all you need.
Yeah. It's not quite better. Traditional banana cream pie because it has an Oreo crust.
Mm.
And then the bananas are pureed in the custard. Mm. And then it has an Italian meringue top. So
what makes that Italian?
It's a specific type of meringue that's stronger than regular meringue. A lot of people think they don't like meringue because when your mom makes it, they just take sugar and egg whites and mix it together. And it tends to break apart, like, really quickly. Is that funny?
No, John is coming over to steal my pie from me.
So a lot of people think they don't like meringue. So in Italian meringue, you heat up the sugar to 240 degrees, and then you pour the liquid sugar into the egg whites, and it makes, like, a lot stronger, fluffier meringue.
Yeah, this meringue will stand up to even to John Tooling.
Yeah.
Do you like it, John? Okay. Plenty more where that came from. Your skills in pastry, did you go to school for this, the culinary pastry school? Or
I went to culinary school just for general culinary arts, but I knew that I wanted to focus on pastry once I got out of school.
Yeah, why the pastry focus? Something in your childhood drove you to pastry?
I was really interested in cooking desserts when I was younger. I would help my mom make dessert, and I wasn't so much interested in cooking regular food. So, and also I'm really interested in the artistry part of it, like the plating of the dessert is what I wanted to do, and working with chocolate and sugar and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Have you made some innovations in the art?
Well, I don't know that I've really made any innovations.
But I mean, your own way of doing things that you're pretty, you know, interested in doing and carrying on. What sorts of things would you say you've done differently than perhaps other people might?
Well, I guess the banana cream pie is one thing.
That's a good example.
That I've done differently.
Yeah.
This evening, we are serving red velvet bread pudding.
Ooh.
For Valentine's Day and tomorrow also.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a little bit different. I like to just take something that people know really well and put like a little twist on it, kind of like the Snickers with the cashews. So.
Yeah. Is it competitive? I mean, you read what other pastry chefs are doing and think, well, boy, that was a good idea. And
yeah, I do. Yeah. Like, why didn't I think of doing that?
Is there?
When I thought of red velvet bread pudding, I was like, why didn't I think of that sooner? People love red velvet. It's everywhere right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is red velvet? Is just chocolate, isn't it? Chocolate cake?
It's like a chocolate cake with a lot of red food coloring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I thought it was.
Like an ungodly amount of red food coloring. Yeah.
And is that the dangerous?
Red number five.
Is that the red? Red number five is dangerous, isn't it? Or something possibly. No, I think that's the good one.
I may have heard that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good one. But where do you find out about what other chefs are doing? Is there like newsletter of, you know, pastry chefs?
There's a lot of industry readings, magazines. One thing that's really cool with social media now is Instagram, because with hashtags, you can just look up different pastry chef, like people will hashtag pastry chef, and So you can look up a lot of different pastry chefs and then just see a picture of whatever they've done. So yeah, that's kind of fun.
Well, that's very interesting. Yeah. And I say, we went last night, we were at Ernest, and you know, John had the lasagna. He said it was the best lasagna he's ever had. And I realize that's not pastry, but you do some amazing things there with your entrees as well.
Yeah. And I should clarify for anyone that wants to come have the best lasagna they've ever had, it doesn't have any noodles in it, and it's a vegetable lasagna, so it's not a traditional lasagna. Yeah. So when you show up there, I don't want you to be disappointed.
Yeah,
because it is very good, though.
It may not actually be a lasagna, but it will be the best lasagna you've ever had. And that pork ham chop was a big...
The pork ham chop is also very good.
Yeah.
They cure it for 48 hours in a sugar salt brine and cure it to be sort of like ham. So it comes out very tender and moist and delicious.
And I had that short ribs. My mother made something very much like that because she tended to cook things for 24 hours. I don't think it took quite that long when we made that, but it was delicious. It just fell apart and was very delicious. Yeah. So the place to go when you're in town here in Chandler is Ernest. It's on, what is that street again? We had to...
Alma School. Chandler Heights.
And Chandler Heights. So check it out, and you'll be very glad you did. Thank you so much for joining us. Danielle Morris, pastry chef. Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman is, of course, our producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer, with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Megan Hannes, Kelly Asborne, and Diana Cook. Technical director is Tom Blaine, with assistance from Brad Kohlberg and Aubrey Ralph. Thank you for hosting us. Thank you for the job.
PRI, Public Radio International.